You're listening to Sarah Talk. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on. Let me change some words here. All right. Ready?
Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held.
Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
You women have a flame coming out of your vagina. You talk about being hot. Well, you sure not gonna be hot. You're gonna have a flame shooting out of your vagina. You're gonna need asbestos panties to stop that.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Welcome to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin. That's our new intro. I hope you enjoy it. I spent a lot of time writing the copy for that and paying people in the UK to record the copy for it. So I hope you enjoy our new intro. I want to start by saying that we do have some folks at work, like the hens at the office, listen to the show. So I can't talk about work anymore. But just for general purposes, if you haven't heard the show before and you didn't pick up on it in the intro, this is very not safe for work. What we talk about, don't listen to this at work. In the studio with me today, my wife, Becca.
Hello.
And David Torres.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. We are waiting for Cheryl Evans, is the author of I Promised Not to Tell, Raising a Transgender Child, about her son and his journey going through transition as a younger child. We're going to talk to her about the book and a little bit about their family while we're waiting to get that put together. I wanted to play a fun little game with David. It's a news quiz, right? Ooh. It's a news quiz game.
Okay.
And I don't have very many questions put together because I just haven't had time. But if y'all like this segment, let us know and I will work on this a little harder for the next episode. All right. So we have four questions.
Okay.
All right. All you do is get three right.
Three right. Okay.
And you win. Nice. You win a refill. I'll fill your coffee cup back
Sweet.
Up. All right.
Pressure's on. Is it multiple choice?
No.
Okay.
Here we go. Nope. You just have to know.
You just have to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Question number one. 18-year-old fine art student Lily Hume made waves with a project called 10 Portraits, where she created a collection of ceramic what?
10 Portraits. She made ceramic penis eye.
Good job. Upon receiving some bullshit text from some guy she'd slept with during art class, Lily firmly grasped the clay and started sculpting his penis from memory, then carved the word liar onto it.
Wow.
Then she continued down memory lane, sculpting penises from memory of other past sexual partners. Each penis was made from clay and glazed white, decorated with a blue flower, and features a flesh-like area where she engraved a personal message about the sexual partner. According to an interview on theladbible.com, she said, it was strange walking into the school cafe and hearing people talk about Lily's willies.
Oh, man. Let me get her on the show.
How does she remember the last 10 penises she came in contact with?
I don't know. Maybe she has sex sober. That is a thing people do.
Who does that?
What?
Let me pull up a picture of this for you.
You have pictures? Wow.
Of 10 ceramic penises.
Yes.
That was a Bob Dylan album, wasn't it? Is that her there?
Yeah, that's her right there. There are 10 peni displayed upon a mantle. Okay, there
oh,
she
there,
is.
Oh, look, she's oh, baking them.
There she is. Yeah.
Man.
Those are lifelike.
Yeah,
she did
right.
It just to watch them burn. She wanted to
put them in a hot oven.
Put them in a hot oven, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
this one says, stop calling me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right? That's weird. And it looks like fine china. It's got that white.
It's something I would display.
It's got a white glaze with a with a blue, the fancy blue flower paint. There it is on the mantle right there.
You know
there
what? You that looks, wow. Who? I feel sorry for
oh,
those two.
Oh, man. There's a couple really little ones in there.
Yeah.
Question number two. The CDC issued a new study that shows an uptick in salmonella cases due to what?
Due to not washing your hands?
Wrong.
No.
According to the study, 13% of chicken-related salmonella cases they studied from 1990 to 2014 were due to human on chicken smooching.
Get the hell out of here.
49% of patients studied said they had snuggled baby chicks, and 46 kept chickens in the house. But the most disturbing of all, 10% of respondents said they kept chickens in their bedroom. What a clucking mess.
Wow. What is the percentage of these people that got salmonella were men?
It didn't give me those demographics.
How many chicken person hybrids hatched out of eggs in 2017?
Okay, the next question. For the first time in 2,000 years, NASA has decided to update what?
That's a tough
2000
one.
2,000 years?
Hmm. Wait. 2,000 years.
In 2,000 years decided to... What? They haven't been around that
okay.
long.
Okay, 2,000 to 3,000 years ago.
2,000 to 3,000 years ago, they decided to update.
They decided to update today, something from 2,000 to 3,000 years ago.
Oh, what were they update? The calendar? No, the. Oh, what is it? What do you know?
I think I know this.
You do?
It's the zodiac.
It is the zodiac.
Oh, what?
3,000 years ago, the Babylonians figured out the signs of the zodiac by drawing an imaginary line between the Earth and the Sun. And then when you extend that line into space, it passes through different constellations. They picked 12 constellations, but there were actually 13 in the zodiac. So the Babylonians left one out. Officious. What's more, Earth's axis has shifted in the last 3,000 years, so the sky doesn't look the same. So NASA explains the signs of the zodiac don't really fit what we use today. Someone born into Leo, for example, should actually be Cancer nowadays.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit anyways.
Right. And that, in the end of the day, it really doesn't matter because it still doesn't predict how your day is going to go right. or what's happening in your week.
You're going to meet that special someone.
Mine changed. Some people's didn't change. Mine changed. I've been a Pisces all my life, and now all of a sudden I'm supposed to be an Aquarius.
Wait, I got one more question. All right, you're one point each here.
Okay.
We need to get another bell so you can ring in.
Yeah.
Earlier this month, the pesticide used to target two species of mosquito known to carry the Zika virus in South Carolina also accidentally killed millions of what?
Cats.
Wrong.
No.
No. Don't even reach for the bell. According to Reuters, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed listing the rusty-patched bumblebee, a prized but vanishing pollinator once widely found in the upper Midwest and northeastern U.S., for federal protection as endangered species.
The rusty what?
So we tried to get rid of the rusty Zika virus.
Bandersnatch?
We killed off rusty-patched
bumblebees. That's usually our knee-jerk reaction to most things.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll be right back with Cheryl Evans, the author of I Promise Not to Tell, Raising a Transgender Child. You're listening to Sarah Talk.
I was feeling so alone.
I was going through a really difficult time.
I didn't want to bother anyone.
I didn't think they'd understand.
It was tough at first, but I did it.
I'm glad I asked for help.
I asked my teacher.
I asked my dad.
You can do this.
Whatever it is, ask for help.
If you're thinking about suicide or need support, call the Trevor Lifeline at 1-866-488-7386. Ask for help.
Promise Not to Tell is a deeply personal memoir of one family's journey to discovering the son they never knew they had. Author and mother Cheryl B. Evans joins us now on the phone. Cheryl, welcome to Sarah Talk.
Thank you very much for having me, Sarah.
We are thrilled to have you on the show to talk about your story. Now, you know, we try to emphasize that there's no like one or right way to experience being transgender or gender nonconforming. Each of us kind of comes to that in our own way. Tell us about the early years in your family with your son and how you came to discover what you assumed to be your daughter was actually your son.
Yeah, well, originally, I mean, on our part as parents, there was certainly a lot of ignorance. We weren't even really aware of transgender children's existence or weren't familiar at all with the topic. And as a result, I guess we both really just felt we had a tomboy on our hands because from a very, very early age, Jordan was always... you know, had the boyish tendencies like to play soccer or be outside doing skateboarding and building forts and all the typical male gender associated things that young boys would do. Whereas growing up, the sister that he had that was 4 years ahead of him was the complete opposite, and an extreme girly girl, always loving her Barbie dolls and things like that. So we just assumed we had, you know, one of each. We had a girly girl and we had a tomboy, and we were perfectly okay with that. And I think that that contributed to the fact that Jordan was able to have a happy childhood, because we didn't really put him in a box where he had to, you know, conform to being a girly girl if that's not who he was at a young age. But to be honest, it was much, much later that we realized, you know, that's not what it was. And again, it wasn't even us that discovered it. It was actually Jordan, around the age of 12, came to my husband, Jim, and I, and sat us down and said, you know, this is what's happening, and this is what I think I am. And it actually followed a phase where puberty had started. You know, breasts are starting to develop. Things are happening where I guess Jordan was feeling playing this boy side of it isn't going to be so easy anymore. And so he decided on his own that I'm going to try and embrace the biological girl that I am. Mm-hmm. So he went out to the mall and bought skirts and fancy little blouses and things like that, and really tried for almost 2 full years to be a girly girl. And that's when depression hit, and that's when things got horribly, horribly wrong.
Now, you talk about, and the description of that time during the puberty where your feeling is very incongruous, that hit home very closely with me. I grew up fairly normal, a boy childhood, doing all the things that are typically associated with boys. But when puberty hit, that for me, that was the change that made me look in the mirror and say, this isn't changing in the right direction. I don't understand what's going on. Now, you went to a variety of doctors to ensure that the initial diagnosis of gender dysphoria was correct and that transition was the best treatment. I think that's interesting, just kind of anecdotally as a comparison, I'll share briefly. I went to a therapist who specializes in gender variance, and from that one appointment, we decided on all of the next steps, that I was definitely experiencing gender dysphoria, I wish to transition socially, medically, and that we would start hormone therapy like the next day. If that's what I had wanted.
Sarah?
Right. So that's, I mean, this was just a few years ago. Well, a year ago, okay. I guess, right? Well, the year ago that I started hormones.
Right. We started therapy maybe two years ago. Almost.
Right. So do you think that for Jordan, that process was so different because he was a minor, and as parents, you really wanted to make sure you weren't making the wrong decision, or the Canadian medical system?
Oh, it was totally an age thing, Sarah. No question about it. I mean, obviously, when you went, you were an adult who was very capable of making decisions for yourself. Mm-hmm. But as a parent, we're talking about a child who wasn't even 13 at the time we started therapy.
Yep.
And I don't know when you reflect back to your teen years, but certainly for me, at the time I was, say, even 15 or 16, I thought I had it all figured out.
Oh, I thought
I knew everything.
I knew it all.
It's
absolutely.
Only much later, you know, you're in your late 20s, your 30s, and you think, I knew nothing. And so as a parent, I had that perspective, and I understood that even though my child is very firm in what he's saying and what he's believing for himself, I'm dealing with a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And you're asking me to go down a path of surgeries and things, that hormones that are going to make changes to this child's body that are not reversible. And we took that incredibly seriously, because we thought, you know, as much as, and I'm, Jordan could not have been more strong in his stance, but you still are thinking that you are responsible for this. And we dealt with just such life-altering things at such a young age. I think that my husband and I, we really just wanted to be certain.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to reach that point where we would have an 18 or, you know, a 20-year-old coming to us later and saying, Mom, why did you let me do that?
Absolutely. There's one story in the book that I really thought was just a really great idea. Can you tell us the story a little bit about Principal Burnell's notebook?
Oh, yes. That was awesome. And again, I mean, it really doesn't matter where you live. It's just whether or not you're going to have a principal that's either going to get on board or not get on board. And I recognize that in different areas, people, you know, their hands are tied in a lot of cases. But Principal Barnell was a true blessing to us from the very beginning when we went in and sat down and explained what was happening and that, you know, our daughter was actually our son and wanted to be coming to school the following week, dressing male. And again, this was just because Jordan had just come out of that period where he had tried to convert to a feminine way and a feminine dress. But now wanted to change his gender expression back to male that he had when he was younger. And so we went in and had the conversation and I don't think he could have been more accommodating. It was just so wonderful. But one of the suggestions he said, which I would highly recommend for any other parents going through this, if they can do it, whether it be through a teacher or a principal, he suggested having a notebook out that he would have at a certain place in his office, which was basically as soon as you go in the door, just sort of on the side there. And he would give it to Jordan. Jordan could write any notes or any problems he was having within the school, whether it was concerns over bathroom use or just, you know, bullying issues, anything at all that came up. He could jot a note to the principal in this notebook and then before he left for the day, leave it in this spot in Principal Barnell's office. And then during the evening, he would be able to respond in writing to Jordan in the notebook and leave it back there. So when Jordan returned to school the next day, he would go to the office and pick up the notebook and see the communication back and forth. So it was kind of a very private way for them to do it without Jordan feeling like he was always in the principal's office.
Yeah.
And it was really, really great.
I mean, it seems so simple, but it's what a great tool. My problem as a teen was kind of a mixture of not really having the words to express, but more that there was this intense feeling of absolute terror at the idea of having to look my mother in the eye and say something like, I've been taking bras from your dresser because it feels good to wear them. And I want to know what it's like to be a girl. I can't imagine, you know, I can't go back in time and think, gosh, if I had a notebook that I could have written back and forth to my parents, if that would have worked or not. But it certainly would have been nice to have had that option to try. And even today, I notice with, you know, anytime my wife and I are going through things, it's so much easier for me to open up when we write back and forth in an email than to sit down across the table and look each other in the eyes and talk about it.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes even if we decide not to share those notes that we're writing, I think that just the therapy of doing that in the first place is so great, whether it's the parent doing it, you know, that has the LGBT child, or whether it's the child themselves. Just the writing, which is actually, you've read the book, so you know that's how the book started. That
right.
was my own personal therapy, was dealing with stuff. And I found writing it down helped me to process and helped me to deal with all the changes that were happening. But yeah, I find it really therapeutic for anyone.
Now, I have to tell you, and we'll save the actual story for the listeners to read the book. But I had to say, as a parent of a six-year-old, I ugly cried when Trevor, the little boy next door, cried himself to sleep after having seen Jordan taken away in an ambulance. That story just completely shattered my heart.
I know. He's a wonderful, wonderful little boy.
Yeah, you could definitely get that from reading the book. One of the more popular topics on our show, and this is something that we're going to talk about after the break, involves the intersection of faith and LGBT identity. For myself, I became atheist in some part due to scientific questioning of religious faith as a method by which to believe a thing, but also because of the clear separatism and injustice that so many churches promote. One of the more interesting stories in the book, for me, you talk about Jordan's sister, Mariah, and how she was processing all of these changes. We often hear the story from the first person or the parents' point of view, but you talked about her seeking out advice from other adults outside the family who kind of fell into that type of churchy, transgender isn't real worldview. What was that like as a parent?
Oh, it was hard. I was jealous, first of all, if I'm completely honest. I mean, you want your kids first and foremost to come to you. And the fact that she was turning to people who were outside of our family, I was jealous of that. I realized that Mariah has always been a little bit more religious than my husband and I have been. And I respect that. I have no desire to change that or to try and push her in one direction or another. It's her right to believe in what her beliefs are. And I always respect whatever anyone wants to believe. So that, you know, that was just something she felt she needed to explore. It was really unfortunate, though, because what happens when you do that and you go to someone outside of a family, they can only advise you on, for example, what the Bible says or what, you know, they believe as far as their religion goes. They can't really tie it back to anything concrete about what the family may be experiencing, or in our case, what Jordan's childhood was like. So without that background or that knowledge, I just felt that it was really unfair and disrespectful for them to give her such strong opinions to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's so much more in the book, and I don't want to give it all away. I want to encourage everybody to read the book. Your writing style is very conversational. It's much like my own. So it was an easy read to kind of sit down and feel like we were sitting in the living room on a couch just having a conversation about life. You cover basic gender identity topics simply from a mother trying to figure out life point of view. And I think that will resonate with a lot of people, especially folks who are kind of at the bottom of this giant staircase looking up, or who may not have anyone in their life or family that experiences any gender variancy.
And like I said, it was, for me, it was just therapy, but you hit it when you said, you know, there's people out there who you just don't know. And I find it's very different from learning from something like this that is just a firsthand account versus a textbook. There's lots of textbooks that can tell us, you know, about gender variance and all of that. But when you have a parent, especially one who might be struggling with acceptance, if you can kind of have, like you say, a casual conversation read from another parent, I just hope it hits home with some of these people. If it saves just one kid from being put out, you know, it'll be worth it.
Absolutely agree. So how's life now? Is Jordan's doing well?
Jordan is doing amazing. Yeah,
that's great.
Very, very well. Jordan graduated in June from high school. He's actually taking a year off and working. He has a wonderful job and will be saving up some money and hoping to go into university in September of 17 and would like to go into something to do with psychology with possibly even, you know, a PhD down the road in his future.
That's fantastic. We're almost out of time here. So before we go, please share our love with Jordan. I know he prefers, as we kind of say in the community, to stay stealth and not really be an activist. If he were sitting here with me now, I would say, you know, I didn't want to be an activist either, but activism chose me. So you never know where your life may take you. But even just by sharing this story and allowing it to be told, I think you'll be helping lots of other families.
I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. And I think that I've told him that too, that one day he may choose to be open. And
sure.
I certainly left the door open for him to write a book called I Am Jordan.
That's awesome. Well, if he does, let us know. We'll absolutely love to talk to him as well. Thank you so much for joining us today, Cheryl. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you both. It's been great talking to you, all three of you. David, you've been so quiet through this. I forgot you were almost there.
That's okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You guys have an awesome rest of the day.
Well, that was great.
I'm moving to Canada.
Listen, I love Canada. Oh, I forgot to tell her that I need some Tim Hortons. I'm out.
Call her back.
I'm out of Tim Hortons.
Every time she
said anything with an oot in it, like about, I was like,
you smiled on the inside.
I did. Yeah. I really
your
did.
Your heart did a little
a little flutter. The book is I Promise Not to Tell. It was a number one new release in Transgender Studies, and within weeks of its release became a bestseller in both gender studies and LGBT biographies and memoirs. It is available at all major online retailers, including Amazon, Apple, and Barnes & Noble, and can be ordered through most brick-and-mortar stores as well. You can find the author, Cheryl B. Evans, on Facebook, or follow her at Twitter at WrittenByMom. Big thanks to Cheryl B. Evans for coming on the show and sharing some of their story. To get your copy of the book, we will put a link to the Amazon item page. It's available in paperback or Kindle. And if you purchase through our website, you'll also be supporting our show. So we do have one copy to give away to a lucky listener. Here's what we're going to do. Both of our telephone and our email record the timestamp. So you can either be the first caller at 224-40-SARAH, 224, put your phone down, 224-407-2724, or you can send us an email to producer@saratalk.com, and the first one of those by timestamp to come in will be the big lucky winner. Let us know, though, how to get in touch with you. You can give us a shipping address. That'd be great.
Sure.
We'll be right back. You are listening to Sarah Talk.
Today, my new dad and I shot off a rocket in the park.
Today, my new son and I failed to shoot off a rocket.
The rocket launched into the air.
And then crashed into the pond.
I'll never forget that day.
I'll never forget that day, even if I tried.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin. In the studio with me today, my lovely wife, Becca.
Hello.
And David Torres.
Hey.
So next, we're going to jump into the news. And one of the things that we enjoy talking about here on the show is faith and the absurdity of belief in the supernatural. So I have
my favorite.
I have some of those stories ready for you today. The first one comes from WCIA. Which is a local news station back home in Illinois that I used to watch. But the article is from LGBTQ Nation. David Hall of Illinois is so determined to avoid watching a workplace training video about LGBTQ awareness, which is a requirement of employment at the Federal Social Security Administration, that he has accepted an unpaid suspension of 2 days and has hired a lawyer in anticipation that it may cost him his job.
This is a federal job.
A federal job. Hall told WCIA TV in Champaign, Illinois, which is, again, not far from where I grew up, he expects to be fired for not signing a form that acknowledges he's seen the video. They wanted me to certify that I had completed the training. He said, I'm not going to certify sin.
Oh,
Hall, who was
Hall,
who was cited for insubordination, claimed to have requested a religious accommodation and said that was denied. Social Security Administration officials refused to comment on a personnel matter. According to Hall, the issue for him is the compulsory nature of the training video. He says, my complaint is more with the fact that it was mandatory. We have never done that for another particular class of people. This is the only group of individuals we've done it for. We haven't done it for veterans, the disabled, blacks, Hispanics, or anything else. So that's the point where I stop and go, maybe he's got a little bit of a point there. I know from my time at Theme Park World, we did have etiquette training to interacting with disabled people.
Okay, but okay, yes. Okay, disabled, I understand. Mm-hmm. But everything else you mentioned there?
No.
It has been in existence in this country for the last 200 years.
Right, but somebody needs to start teaching this. They need to have a training video for how to interact with black people at the police station.
Well, for police. That's absolutely true. That's actually for most of them.
Watch the news. All right, so let's roll this video from WCIA.
If I have to choose between Almighty God and Social Security and the federal government, believe you me, Jesus Christ wins out.
I can't love you.
That's why this man says he's okay with getting fired after a 14-year career. Good evening. I'm Aaron Bennett.
And I'm Jennifer Roscoe. A Tolono man has hired a lawyer after refusing to watch a workplace training video. David Hall works at the Social Security Administration office in Champaign. He says all employees were told to watch a video about LGBT inclusion, but he claims that violates his religious freedom. WCIA3's Aaron Eads live in our newsroom now. Aaron, Hall says he's expecting to be fired.
Jennifer, he says he hopes it won't come to that, but if it does, so be it. I sat down with him today to let him explain his position, but that's something LGBT community leaders say makes no sense.
You can't be any more sort of Christian than you can be sort of pregnant.
David Hall has no problem signing his name on a blank piece of paper. His issue is signing something to confirm he's watched a workplace diversity training video on the subject of LGBT customers.
They wanted me to certify that I had completed the training. I'm not going to certify sin. I'm not going to certify an abomination.
Hall works in this office as an IT guy of sorts. So he's
of sorts.
Social Security patrons. But after refusing to watch the video, he says he was still reprimanded for insubordination, then suspended for 2 days without pay. He says he requested a religious accommodation, but that was denied.
My complaint is more with the fact that it was mandatory. We have never done that for another particular class of people. This is the only group of individuals that we've done it for. We haven't done it for, had mandatory training for veterans, the disabled, blacks, Hispanics, or anything else.
Well, my response to him would probably be quite a lengthy lecture on the historical implications of being queer and accessing social services.
Stephanie Scora is the president of Champaign County's UP Center, an LGBT social services agency. She says she's surprised a training video is behind this.
At first glance, glance, I thought that the man might have been confused and thought that there was depiction of gay activity in the video or something.
I would argue that it's not a training video. It's promoting an agenda and a lifestyle that I simply don't agree with.
How do you know that if you haven't watched it?
And how do you know that it's not, that it's just promoting awareness? I don't need to certify training to be culturally aware. What am I being aware of? So, you know, it's a political agenda.
Maybe if you watch the fucking video, you'd know.
Right?
Political agenda. It's
we're aware that you're an
video.
Asshole.
I treat a human being the same way I would want to be treated.
If that's the case, then he shouldn't have any problem watching the video, knowing that as much as he may disagree with its content, he will be treating everybody equitably at the end of the video, just as he would at the start of the video.
Exactly.
He says despite his position, he has LGBT friends and family members and supports their right to fight him on this issue.
I have no animosity towards anyone.
The regional social security.
All right, I've heard enough of that guy.
I have some religious accommodations for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. A boat to Jerusalem. Here it is.
Now I would expect that in Indiana or Texas. Just wait. We're not there yet. In fact, that's not even the next one. So let me knock this down here so you can have to look at
Jeebus.
All right. The next story comes from Fox News.
Oh, here we go.
Pastors could face jail over Massachusetts anti-discrimination law. Churches in the People's Republic of Massachusetts have grave concerns about a new anti-discrimination law that could force congregations to accommodate the transgender community under the threat of fines and jail time. The law, which goes into effect in October, does not specifically mention churches or other houses of worship. However, the Attorney General, along with the government commission assigned to enforce the law, have a different point of view. Attorney General Maura Healey wrote that places of public accommodation include auditoriums, convention centers, lecture halls, houses of worship, and other places of public gathering. Would you agree with that definition of places of public accommodation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, the commission responsible for enforcing the anti-discrimination law, reinforced that interpretation in a document titled Gender Identity Guidance. Quote, even a church could be seen as a place of public accommodation if it holds a secular event, such as a spaghetti supper, that is open to the general public, the document states. And all persons, regardless of gender identity, should have the right to full and equal accommodations, advantages, facilities, and privileges of any public place of accommodation.
Right.
The law bootstraps the idea of gender identity onto existing civil rights laws. MFI President Andrew Beckwith, this is the Massachusetts Family Institute, even having a sign in your church that says, quote, this bathroom is for biological women only, end quote, could subject the pastor of the church to up to 30 days in jail.
Wow.
Nice.
Do it.
Beckwith said under the law, the sign would be treated the same as if it had said whites only.
Yep.
Yes.
Perfect. It's
exactly what we've been saying all along.
How many days in jail did they spend for touching altar boys?
Right.
Stand by. We're coming to that. The answer is zero, as you'll hear in a story coming right up.
Oh.
Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, Commissioner Sunila Thomas George said, you would want to make sure that people are treated with regard to their gender identity and treated fairly and equitably. So what specifically does that mean? Asks Fox News. As long as people who are transitioning or who have transitioned are able to use a restroom they identify with, I think you are complying with the law, she said. You would want to make sure they are accommodated. In other words, says Fox News, churches that hold spaghetti suppers would have to let men who identify as women use the same bathrooms as the little Sunday school girls.
They don't need to be worrying about the little Sunday school girls.
No, they need to be worrying about the pastor with the little Sunday school boys.
Right.
And make sure that spaghetti supper has enough meatballs.
Spaghetti.
So is that a thing that churches do? Spaghetti
suppers? Yeah. Look, this is something that I grew up with. We would have lunch, big luncheons after service on Sunday, like all the time. The purpose of those kinds of events is if we open it up to the public and it's not church, maybe non-religious people will come, mm-hmm. and then we can slap them over the head with some churchy stuff, and then they'll believe and repent and come to church.
Right.
Like that, it's a whole recruiting program, is what it is.
Well, that's how cult works.
Sure,
I didn't go to a real church. We've discussed this on the show before.
No,
we didn't have that kind of stuff. We went to Sweet Tomatoes every Sunday,
and then you knocked on doors.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Pastor Ann Graham. is the daughter of evangelical pastor Billy Graham. She is also the head of Samaritan's Purse Charity, which operates an annual shoebox appeal.
Shoebox?
She was speaking to a right-wing radio pundit, Steve Deese, and you're just not going to fucking believe what she had to say.
Oh. I think I'll believe it.
So in our nation, one of the things that, you know, I think we pray for is that some of this craziness would settle down, and our defiance of God would, that we would be deeply repentant and humbled, so that our nation, which is, seems to be shaking its fist in God's face and telling him to get out of our politics, get out of our schools, get out of our businesses, get out of the marketplace, get off the street, you know, just...
Go.
Maybe if God would take care of those poor starving children on the other side of the world, we wouldn't be shaking our fist at him. Just saying.
Right. Right. And maybe if anything else that you prayed for actually came true, and we could use science as a method to determine that prayer works, and there's actually somebody listening to it, maybe then he would respond.
Yeah, some sort of like device, like a prayerometer or something.
But there's but there's nobody listening.
No.
It's just stunning to me the way we are basically abandoning God as a culture and as a nation. Because when we do that, then God, the Bible says God abandons us and he backs away and takes his hand of favor, blessing, his hand of protection away from us, and he abandons us.
This is a classic religious apologetics bullshit, right? Where God's not answering our prayers because we're doing bad things. Right. We're bad people.
So you gotta pray harder.
Right.
Oh my God. Back and forth. That's the old, which came first, the chicken or the egg argument.
Don't kiss either. You get salmonella poisoning.
God abandoned me. No, I abandoned God.
So the hope is that when we cry out to him and... in deep repentance and humility and asking, just say, God, we're sorry. You know, we're asking you to come back. Would you return to us? Would you once again bless us? Then I think there'll be peace in our street, on our streets, and there would be, in our leadership, a caring about what's best for the nation instead of their own, agendas.
Two things here. People worrying about their own agendas, then stop trying to keep it so that I can't go to the ladies' room.
Right.
No, let's put your agenda aside then. To go back and have God come back to us because God went away because we pissed him off.
Didn't she read it?
Didn't she read what?
The Bible?
Well, that's exactly what God does. But God gets pissed off and he throws a hissy fit.
Well, but the story of the prodigal son is that the person that left comes back.
Hmm.
I think it's an evolution of our society for us to abandon all deities.
Absolutely.
And it's happened before in other societies, and you know, eventually it'll happen to ours once everyone reaches a certain level of intelligence and enlightenment.
There are many,
going to take a while.
There are many atheists, famous atheists, right, that often say, you are 99% atheist to the believer, right? You're already 99% atheist. Do you believe in Thor? Well, no, of course not.
Yeah.
So there were 3,000 gods before yours that you don't believe in. What makes them any different than the one you do believe in?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Because he's the one true, right?
Right.
Yeah. So was Zeus.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Vishnu.
I think he would begin to reveal the plots of our enemies and terrorists before they're carried out. You know, there are all sorts of ways, even the weather patterns. You know, he can even control the weather patterns and protect us from these violent storms that are taking human life.
You've got to be fucking kidding me. If you believe that God is all powerful and does all things, then God is the one creating the terrible storms. And I would argue back to your earlier point, because we are terrible fucking children.
Yeah. And if these storms are killing people, it's God's will, right? Because everything is God's
will.
Everything's already been planned out, right?
It's all in the plan.
It's all in the plan.
I ain't going to worship that kind of douchebag.
Right?
And so there are many different ways that he can answer prayer. And so we won't know until we pray.
Except that every time we pray about anything, there's never a concrete, solid answer or evidence that whatever happened is because of God.
Yeah, could be sheer coincidence.
You interpret everything that happens based on what you've been taught.
It's not coincidence, David. It's aliens.
Or it might be aliens. I believe aliens way more than I believe God.
Oh, certainly. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm fond of, and I don't know if it's good, I just like saying it, so I hope it is, but I have said many times, Anne, that
her voice is
knowing
changed.
God's...
Listen, this is Steve, the hell's his name? Steve Deese. He's a right-wing, oh, he's the... right-wing radio. Oh, okay.
Not... Will is easy, or is simple, but it's not easy.
That God's will is simple... Let's listen to that again, but not easy.
I'm fond of, and I don't know if it's good, I just like saying it, so I hope it is, but I have said many times, Anne, that knowing God's will is easy, or is simple, but it's not easy.
What the fuck is that even supposed to mean?
I don't know. It's just jargon.
Like, isn't
claiming to know God's will? Come on.
I thought we weren't supposed to understand God's will, that it was just his plan.
It depends on which book you read.
Oh,
this
shit.
This is true. You and version.
I read the one inside the...
I mean, what you're describing is very simple. This is, and God tries to keep things simple. It doesn't get much simpler than I want to be known to the point that I will become one of you so that you can know me as one of you, as God among us, Emmanuel. God dwells with us. I will even come and dwell in you later. I'll put my spirit in you. That's how much I want to be in communion with you.
Nobody's going to put anything in me. Definitely not God or Jesus.
Hi, I'm God. I'm going to put my spirit in you.
My name is Emmanuel. Bend over.
Oh my goodness.
Get ready for the spirit spray.
There's more. There's more coming. All right. There's more coming.
That's what he said.
So, I mean, that makes things pretty simple, but it's not that easy. I mean, the prayer you're describing seems simple enough. What is wrong with the human heart, however, that it's just not easy?
I think it's not easy necessarily because we don't think we really need it. And so we're struggling with our own pride or, you know, self-sufficiency. And I think that's why God allows bad things to happen. I think that's why he would allow a 9/11 to happen.
Holy shit. That's why he would allow 9/11 to happen.
He flooded the freaking earth.
Right.
Why?
What more do you need? Right.
That's why
he would let a 9/11 happen if this, you know, if this is actually true.
Which it's not.
You know, I hope that we're becoming self-sufficient as a species.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd rather have that. I don't want to rely on... I can't explain this. It must be in this book.
Well, why would you want to rely on somebody that you have to pray to, but then you never get the prayer answered? It's like, right. Oh, I'm going to just, you know, rely on this brick wall to make me breakfast.
I mean,
I'll starve to death.
I understand psychologically what the Bible can do to people, right? Sure. I was part of it. We were all part of it at one point in time. You get a comfort when you're younger, right?
Yeah.
When things are tough. But, you know, what I did was I adapted those thoughts to myself. I was like, you know, I can fix the problems that I have with, you know, how I view the world and how I struggle sometimes with depression or things like that. I don't have to rely on some imaginary fictitious tale to do that. I have moved on. I've moved past that.
Right.
And I wish that others would
absolutely
as well. I wish the entire country would.
There was a really good interview on NPR I listened to in the middle of the night at work one night, where they were talking about the emotional need for these beliefs. And there was basically, they did a study that said there is a connection between the infant needing a mother figure to provide, and as you grow up and those relationships become different and drift, that you still have that need. I need to have somebody to take care of me. At the end of the day, somebody needs to feed me, somebody needs to clothe me, somebody needs to house me. And if it's not going to be a parent, then it must be a god.
Yeah, most of the people that I speak to about this this particular subject, for me, or at least in my experience, for them, it boils down to the existence of an afterlife.
Right.
That's the most appealing part of the entire thing. Like,
right.
I, as an atheist, don't believe in an afterlife, and I have come to terms with the fact that one day I'm going to die. I might not like it.
Right.
Right. But, you know, it's going to happen. And a lot of people that I talk to, like, will start becoming extremely nervous when I start questioning, well, you know, is there an afterlife?
Right.
And there's like, yeah, but my book tells me I'm promised that I will have an afterlife. It's like, well,
not in this castle, Mario. Sorry.
Okay. There is, that was fantastic, by the way. There's about a minute left. Let's finish this out.
Okay.
I think that's why he would allow a 9/11 to happen, or some of these other, you know, the dreadful attack in San Bernardino, or some of these other places, to show us that we need him.
Yeah, we don't need him.
You know, we're desperate.
We definitely don't need somebody who's going to do terrible shit to us like that.
Right.
Without him. And then when you're desperate and you cry out to him, that's not hard. What's hard is to try to, you know, start from scratch and try to work yourself up to that, which is why he lets us have situations where it's just, it would be hard not to cry out to him.
When you're desperate, you feel like you need a higher power. That's
you're,
the truth.
You're looking for a parent to pick you up after you scream.
So, you know, the cry out to God when you need him is something that I believe almost is natural in the human spirit, because we're created by God and for God. And I think our hearts turn to God in a hard place.
Right. So that kind of the NPR story about, you know, that it is a innate human craving to need someone like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. But how did it get there?
God put it there.
Indoctrination. Wow.
The next story comes from Raw Story. Most of these stories actually coming forward here are going to be from the Raw Story. A Colorado church didn't report pastor's child sex abuse because biblical counseling.
Biblical counseling?
A church in Thornton, Colorado has come under fire after court documents revealed this week that it failed to report a pastor's sexual abuse to police because it believed the problem could be solved with, quote, biblical counseling.
Shit.
Local news station KDVR reports the pastor, Robert Wyatt, repeatedly had sexual intercourse with a 12-year-old girl.
Oh my God.
Who was a parishioner at the Agape Bible Church in Thornton. What's even more disturbing about this case, however, is the fact that court documents show church officials knew about Wyatt's sexual abuse and did nothing. According to an arrest affidavit for Wyatt, both head pastor Daryl Ferguson and the 12-year-old girl's adoptive parents agreed that it would be best to not go to the police because they were concerned about what would happen to Wyatt. Instead, the affidavit claims the church and the parents agreed that biblical counseling that they would receive through the church was sufficient to fixing the problem. The officer who interviewed the girl's adoptive father said that the man, quote, made it clear his interest was in protecting the church and its reputation more than protecting his daughter. Police only learned about the pastor's abuse because another parishioner told them about it after being disgusted by the church's inaction.
Jail them all.
Now, that's something we've talked about before, and Becca is over there just about to puke all over the table because this is something that's rampant in the JW church.
This makes me so angry, and all of these stories make me so angry because, first of all, they're classifying it as child sexual abuse. It is not child sexual abuse. It is statutory rape.
Yep.
Use the word rape. It's mm-hmm. rape. It's rape. It's
it
rape.
Is. Yes.
It's a child, and they're not old enough to make, they're not old enough to consent to this stuff. They're not old enough to make these decisions. And even if she knows that it's wrong, what is she going to do? This is the guy that is at her church and what's, you know, oh my God. Ugh. Okay. So yes, use the word rape, put them all in prison. And those people that are her adoptive parents, they should never
take all their
be
children.
Allowed to have any children mm-hmm. or adopted other or otherwise. It's just disgusting.
I can't believe that they even agreed to that bullshit. If I was the parent of that child, mm-hmm. I would have went in there with a sawed off.
And these stories, these stories are all over the place. And this whole, oh, well, we can handle it in the church.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big
What
thing.
Does that remind you of?
That's a big thing in the mm-hmm. in the JW
the Catholic
community.
Church and the JW church.
I have so many friends and people that I know that, you know people that have gone through these things where we're just going to handle it in it within. We're not going to call the police because it's going to, you know, bring shame. Well, it should bring shame if you're protecting these people that are child abusers and rapists.
Right, that's even
and
more
pedophiles.
Shameful.
Right. That's like seriously?
That's not even shameful. That's disgusting.
It's again with the churches.
So, I picked these stories starting with that one and
to piss us off.
It's only going
to
get worse. It's only going
to
I'm sorry. Listen.
What is Trey Crowder
get
say?
Your red
get my
up.
Red up.
Get your red up. It's only going to get worse from here. So I picked these stories because so often we hear the apologetic argument that is, you know, but that's not my religion. That's not the kind of Christianity that I do, right? Which is the No True Scotsman failure in logic, very classic example of a logical fallacy. where if you say all Scotsmen wear kilts, well, clearly not all Scotsmen wear kilts, but if you make the assumption that because a Scotsman wears a kilt, that all Scotsmen wear a kilt,
right,
then your logic has broken down. I'm sorry, your brain is malfunctioning.
Yeah.
And then they argue that, so what's the harm in it? Let them have their, but if they're not, as long as they're not raping kids, right? Mm. What's the harm in it? Why bother to even go up against these religious people and try to stop them from perpetuating this nonsense? Well, that's a good example right there.
Yeah.
Right? But there are more. We have to take a stand and say, this is wrong and you must stop it. And it comes from the book, very clearly comes from the book itself.
Just for those people out there that might think, you know, oh, that's not my religion. I never thought it was my religion. You hear
sure.
these stories, you know, oh, another priest and a kid and a pastor and this. And I always thought, oh, that doesn't happen in my religion. And
oh, those Catholics.
And yeah, exactly. Right. You spend your whole life thinking, oh, well, you know, I have the right. I have the right version of the Bible.
Right.
And we're doing this the right way. And then one day reality seeps in and you find out that you were wrong. If you doubt that, look up the Royal Australian Commission. They did an investigation in Australia last year and it's been going on for a long time. And they went through, I don't even know how many groups of different religions and corporations to investigate child sexual abuse cases. And there were thousands and thousands and thousands of cases. And it was the Catholic Church. It was the Mormons. It was the JWs. And then it was the Boys and Girls Club. And it was, you know, all of these different organizations. Most of them were religious affiliated mm-hmm. organizations.
Sure.
And the amount of cases and the number of victims and the number of perpetrators, it was so eye-opening that this is happening in religion. And most of the companies, corporations that weren't really affiliated with religions had much smaller mm-hmm. numbers. The bigger numbers came out of religious groups. And that was, I think, because of the power that the people that are running these religions have with the fear mongering. And well, you can't tell anybody, because mm-hmm. if you do, God is going to get angry at you.
Wow. That's an interesting observation and correlation. If you can send me that, you're the director now. When you post this show, put a link on that.
Yeah.
All right. So you say, but not all religion is bad, right? Some people do good things with religion. It's not all rapey. Well, it doesn't have to be all rapey. Another story from the Raw story. An Indiana woman uses state religious freedom law to justify lashing her son with a coat hanger.
Disgusting.
Right? We hear this shit all the time, too. But Indiana was the kind of the front runner in the transgender rights debate, where they passed a law that was very pro-religious leaning and anti-equality leaning, that said, you know, look, if you run a bakery and you don't want to bake a gay cake, don't bake a gay cake. You just say Jesus and you're good. Right?
I didn't know cakes could be gay.
They can.
They
I love, absolutely.
I love gay
cakes. Are the best.
They're pretty good.
Oh, are those the one you open up and you cut it and it's all rainbows inside? Yeah, I like those. Those are pretty.
They're delicious.
So there's a picture of this kid.
Oh, God.
30-year-old Indiana woman facing felony child abuse charges is arguing that she should not be prosecuted under the law. WTHR-TV reported. Kin Park Tang said in court that she beat her 7-year-old son with a coat hanger in accordance with her religious beliefs and quoted from the biblical verse Proverbs 23:13, which states, "Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol." According to court documents, Thing attacked the boy on February 3rd. She said she hit the boy in order to stop him from endangering his 3-year-old sister. So there's another child in the home.
Right.
Great.
Younger.
"I was worried for my son's salvation with God after he dies." There you go. The afterlife. "I decided to punish my son to prevent him from hurting my daughter and to help him learn how to behave as God would want him to."
Beat other people.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
that's
to your
old
kids.
Great principle.
That's the old, we don't beat our kids because that's saying hitting is okay.
Yep.
Because of that, she asked for the case to be dismissed, claiming her act was in accordance with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was passed last year. Her request, thankfully, was denied.
Good.
How long are they going to use that?
Are they going to take their children
as long
away?
As they can?
They need to take those children away. So, and I'll tell you what, if this kid survives his childhood, he might become an atheist, if that's...
Sure.
Yeah. He's one now.
Yeah, I'm sure, right?
Well, we all are born atheists.
No, you know he's screaming, God help me, as she's beating him to death. Yeah.
Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry says, we predicted this was exactly what was going to happen. Individuals would assert their religious freedom to justify what is clearly criminal conduct. Mm. Thaing, a refugee from Myanmar, who was granted political asylum in the U.S., has already completed parenting therapy she was ordered to attend in a civil case connected to her actions.
What's her last name? Mylar?
No. That's where she's from. Myanmar.
Myanmar.
Thaing is her last name.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. She said in an affidavit, this is the best. Okay. She said in an affidavit that she now knows that there are other ways to discipline one's child besides physical violence.
What? Now she knows.
Now she knows.
Now that she's a felon.
Jesus Christ.
She needs to not have children.
The head of a local advocacy group, the Burmese American Community Institute.
Oh, she's from Burma.
Called the use of corporal punishment a cultural practice in Myanmar, where police are less likely to intervene unless a parent seriously injures their child.
Like, is that population control? Like...
No, it's religious.
If she's beating him
ridiculous,
like that badly, gun that just doesn't make sense to me.
What's seriously injured? Right? Like dismemberment?
Adjusting to the practices in the United States, said Elisa Vani, can be challenging. That's the head of the local advocacy group.
Like, I know that corporal punishment is a thing, but I thought it was dying out.
Yeah, it needs to die out.
I mean, you know, we stopped doing that. What, how many? 40 years ago, maybe?
Let me see. Do I have a picture of this? There's the welts,
that's
right?
Disgusting. Yeah.
That's the marks on this kid.
And how old is he?
And a teacher...
Four, five?
Seven.
Seven.
They found out because the teacher saw all the marks. The boy's teacher saw that he had 36 welts and bruises spread out over his back, neck, and arm.
And if I'm that teacher, that kid's not going home.
So the next one's worse. The next story, also from the Raw story, New York man confesses to beating his daughter to death with a baseball bat after asking God to intervene. Now, if there's anyone listening who makes apologetic arguments for religion, you need to listen to this story. And if you have kids, close your eyes, picture it's your child. A New York man, possibly jealous over the attention his cancer-stricken baby had been receiving, confessed to beating her to death with a baseball bat, saying that he first asked God to step in and stop him. Okay, so when you ask me, why do I have such a problem with people believing in this fairy tale God that doesn't do any harm? But we're taught that this is a personal, interactive God who listens to you and tells you things and has a conversation with you. And by teaching people that, this is the shit that happens. According to People magazine, Ryan Lawrence, 25, took a first-degree murder plea deal for the February death of his daughter, 21-month-old Maddox, last Thursday in court in New York. The court records show that Lawrence admitted he took his daughter to a remote and secluded location where he bludgeoned the baby repeatedly with a wooden baseball bat before placing her body and the bat in a prepared fire pit for hours. He then bound her remains to a cinder block and tossed them into a local harbor. Her body was later recovered in Syracuse's Onondaga Lake. After being taken into custody, Lawrence reportedly confessed to Detective Mark Rusin that he had asked God to intervene, saying he prayed, quote, God, if I'm not meant to kill her, make her stumble. According to District Attorney Bill Fitzpatrick, baby Maddox had already fought off eye cancer, with the attorney suggesting that Lawrence was jealous over the amount of attention his daughter received. He's set to be sentenced in October.
He needs to be tied up to a cinder block and set on fire, beat the crap out of with a baseball bat.
If there's ever a time where eye for an eye is the right response, this is it. Can we take this fucker out into the woods and beat his ass with a baseball bat too? And throw him in a goddamn fire pit?
This is clearly somebody that had mental problems.
Oh, obvious.
Certainly. There's the guy there and there's the baby. God.
So you have somebody who's mentally unstable like this who needs help and instead probably went to church.
Right.
And was probably referred by somebody else to go to church to pray.
Yep.
And instead of getting the medical attention that he needed, he beat his baby daughter to death with a baseball bat.
Right.
So, apologetic Christians, defend this.
Yep.
Seriously.
Defend this.
I'd like to hear one good argument.
And here's what the argument would be. Well, as you said, he's clearly mentally unstable.
Mm.
They'll say, this is not a case of religious belief causing this to happen. It's that he was mentally insane. And I would argue that simply by believing in a thing that you can't see, you can't touch, you can't test its existence is a good definition of insanity myself.
It's foolish. If you have no proof of evidence, why would you believe in it?
Right.
Why would you waste your
because
time?
Because it makes me feel good.
Why would you waste your time? Mm. Believe in yourself. Believe in humanity.
Right. Yeah.
Something we've been neglecting for a really long time.
So as to not leave the show on a down note, the last story will bring us back up. This is a story from WFTV here in Orlando.
Oh.
An Orange County high school student said he wants to be prom queen. I'll repeat that. He wants to be prom queen. But school administrators initially wouldn't allow it because of his gender. That changed when Channel 9's Mike Manzoni began asking questions about the policy. The school is now reversing its decision, saying the policy will allow Anthony Martinez to run for homecoming queen, and the principal who told the boy he couldn't run never consulted with the district central office.
Hmm.
Martinez said he became emotional when he was told he couldn't run for homecoming queen. His boyfriend, Giancarlo Medina, wants to run for homecoming king.
Aww.
Right? So Martinez sweet. Was first told by Cypress Creek High School principal John McHale he couldn't run for queen because he's a boy. Orange County Public Schools' anti-discrimination policy says that the district cannot discriminate against students on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. So there you go.
Cool. Keep that. I'm gonna look this up.
I think Orlando is pretty pretty.
You know these people,
thinking, right?
I don't know.
Oh,
maybe I will by the end of the day.
Yeah. And again, that's something I talk about. That I think if I believed in supernatural things, I would say drew me here. You know, coming from Cornville, Hill Folk, unaccepting Bible Belt, Illinois, I didn't come here for that. I came here for something else. And one could easily make that, God led me here. But, you know, life is full of interesting coincidences.
Have you ever been to Miami?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Do you want me to tell you the story about going to fucking Miami?
We don't want to go to Miami.
Let me tell you about fucking Miami.
Miami sucks.
We were coming home from the Keys.
Yes. We had to go there to get our passport.
That was a fucking disaster,
Never do that again. Yeah. Always get your passport a year before you're traveling.
We took our cruise out of Miami. Also, bad idea.
Horrible.
Never do that again.
But we were coming home.
We went to the Keys on a vacation, and we were coming home. And I thought, well, we've got some time to kill. All right, let's just stop at a beach, and we'll, you know, have a good time. Well, we were hungry, so we're driving into Miami. We're hungry. What do you want to eat? Oh, I don't know. What do you want to eat? Classic. Argument.
True.
Finally, we decided on Chinese.
Yeah, let's find a Chinese buffet.
Let's find a good Chinese place, right?
Yeah.
So we turned to the Google and looked up the Chinese place that was nearby. Now, I want you to picture an old shopping plaza that maybe had like a Kmart in it back in the day, right? When Kmart was a thing.
Anymore, though.
And it's closed down and like all the signs have been removed and nothing has been cleaned in a decade. And all of the little shops next to the anchor store have also mostly closed their doors. And there's, you know, fucking plywood on the windows and stuff, right? That's the kind of place we ended up.
There's two other businesses that are still open in this plaza. One's a nail salon and one's a barber shop. And there's all kinds of people of questionable character standing outside.
And we had our kid with us.
Yeah, and he was really little. So I'm like paranoid. We're in the brand new Jeep.
Yes.
Brand new. You've seen this vehicle. I mean, if I were a thug in Miami, I'd try to rip that thing off. So we're sitting at the table and I'm looking out the window the whole time. I can't concentrate on eating because I'm watching the Jeep and I've got my hand on my phone, like so that I'm ready to take a picture of any criminal that might steal the vehicle.
But it didn't happen, right?
It didn't happen. But it turns out we were actually, I can't remember the name of the town we were in, but we were actually in the worst ghetto town area in Miami.
Carroll City?
I don't even remember now.
It doesn't matter. But it was enough for me to go, I am never going back to Miami ever again in my life.
That's not... I grew up in Miami. That was my hometown.
So sorry.
But that...
And you turned out fine for it.
What I'm trying to say is my experience with Miami growing up back in the 80s and 90s was that it was different. When I grew up in the classroom that I sat in, there was every nationality, As I got older and I started adventuring out into the world of Miami or what Miami was, now it's a Brazilian getaway, but what it was before was very accepting and very diverse, you know? So for somebody like me to be that type of person raised in that type of environment, it was always very natural for me. And then when I went to school in Alabama, then that's like the first time at the age of 19 that I was like,
culture shock.
Whoa, people are racist, you know? So it's, I mean, all people are racist because whites, blacks, even the Mexicans there were wary of me and said awful things. I wanted you to see that part of Miami.
Right.
You know, not they're going to put my Jeep up on blocks.
Jack my car.
I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, so, but a lot of the same thing, like it was a very diverse area. We had, you know, like people from everywhere. In my elementary school, I was very surrounded by difference, you know, like it was good. And I spent, as a teenager, a lot of weekends in Miami. We go down to South Beach, we go hit the salsa clubs, we go, you know, do whatever. So yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, just stay out of Liberty City.
Just exactly. I, you know,
don't get Chinese food.
Don't get Chinese food
in the middle of downtown Carroll City.
Okay, so listen, we gotta go. We're way out of time here, but I do want to leave with this thought. I got approached by Jennifer Nicole Kendra Marvin. Okay. She has a few names. So anyway, Jennifer, we'll call her.
Yeah, just call her Jennifer.
She approached me about doing a live broadcast at this year's Transgender Day of Remembrance. Now, here's the problem. I work that night, so I'm not sure I'm going to be able to pull that off unless I change the schedule, which is very possible. If we both go, then we need a sitter.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you hear that, people out there?
Look, I don't want some random listening to my show babysitting my kids.
Oh, Jesus. Uh-oh. What does that say about your listeners? Just kidding.
Well, look, there's a litmus test of if you're gonna watch my kid or not.
Oh, background check?
The first question is, do you believe in God, Jesus, Jehovah?
Oh, please don't come
Vishnu,
telling my kid
Krishna.
About the Bible.
That's
the first
question to ask. Yeah.
My kid's coming home talking about God is dead. I'm like, what? How do you even know anything about God?
So I really want to do this. And she wants us to do a live video stream broadcast. There are three different components to the night. They do some performances. There are local choirs and stuff that do performances, which we may not be able to do because of copyright broadcast law and all of that stuff. But then there's a speaker session and then the actual visual itself. And so at the very least, I would love to come out and an audio broadcast, but if we can do a video cast as well on YouTube, I think that would be awesome. So if you guys want to see us do that, let us know. It's coming up in November. This is a great example of how Patreon really will help us get out into the community and do more. The donations that we receive through Patreon will go towards things like this, us being able to pack up some equipment, drive out. This is all on the other side of Orlando. And, you know, pay a sitter for the night just to be able to get out and get involved in the community a little more and bring you guys good stuff to listen to. And
we call it the Sarah Talk Road Show.
Yeah, right. Going on the road.
That'd be fun.
On the road again.
Please.
Can we play that as our song? Can that be our theme song? No?
I'd rather hear.
And now, Conway Twitty.
I was going to go with the bird is the word, but...
I've been watching too much Family Guy lately. Yeah. All right. David, thank you for joining us again today.
Pleasure as always.
And Becca, appreciate you being here.
Tell the baby, thanks for taking a nap.
Yeah, right? Thanks for taking a nap. And we will see you on the next show. You've been listening to Sarah Talk.
Sarah Talk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/SarahTalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@saratalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. and follow us on social media, facebook.com/SarahTalkRadio and on Twitter @SarahTalkRadio. Sarah Talk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.